Hey, hey! Welcome to another episode of Cream City Dreams, the podcast where we talk to incredible Milwaukee women living their dream in the Cream City. And this week is our very last episode of season three with a guest, or I should say guests, because we have two fabulous women on, Lisa Attenito and Sandy Cunningham, both from the Women's Fund of Greater Milwaukee, who are talking to us all about how they support women and women's organizations and girls, and how they encourage and activate philanthropy that advances the equity for women and girls, so that we can all live in a community where women and girls realize their full potential and everyone thrives, right? So we need to bolster up these women and these girls in our city, and that's exactly what they're doing. And we're super excited to talk to them. Or I should say, and in this episode, you'll hear me talking to them. Shelly is not here today, and we're going to talk all about that next week in our final episode of season three, what Shelly's up to, why she's not here today. So today you got me interviewing Lisa and Sandy from the Women's Fund of Greater Milwaukee. Thank you both for joining. I'm so excited to have you here. I first heard about the Women's Fund from Kate, who's on your board, because her kids and my kids play all the sports together. And we were talking about it on the sidelines, and she sent me an email and invited me to the big event that you had last fall at Pottawatomie. So that was my first experience of the Women's Fund. And I was like, wow, look at this organization and what they do for our city. And I'm excited that more people will get to hear about it on this podcast, because as you know, it's a podcast about women and women who are living their dreams. And so for the seasons one and two, we really focused on the individual women and their dreams and how they got there and what they did to get there and who supported them. But we wanted to switch it up a little bit for season three and look at the dream makers in our city. And so who are the women and the organizations that are supporting women in these dreams? So as you've probably heard, we talked to Wendy at WBIC, we talked to Cecilia Gore at the Brewers Foundation, Julie Kaufman at Fix, Corey Jo Biddle at Fuel.
Lauren at Professional Dimensions.
Yes, Lauren at Professional Dimensions. Actually, that one just came out today as we're speaking. But so many incredible women. And so I'm excited that the Women's Fund is going to be a part of this season. So maybe we could just start there for our listeners who might not know about the Women's Fund and what you do. Maybe just give us a little bit of info on what you do, who you are.
Sure.
Lisa, maybe you want to start.
Yes, of course. So the Women's Fund started after about 10 years of conversation as part of sort of a national wave of women's funds and foundations that were started under the umbrella of community foundations. And the Women's Fund of Greater Milwaukee follows that pattern. So we launched in the mid-1980s under the umbrella of what was then called the Milwaukee Foundation, which migrated to become the Greater Milwaukee Foundation. And then in 2006, we had a mutual parting. The Women's Fund became a separate 501c3 independent entity. Mm. And we have remained true to our founding mission of activating philanthropy that advances equity for women. So we are definitely focused on the money. We're focused on the money because as an endowment, we want to be good stewards of the money that we have been given. But at the same time, we know that there is power in money, and that when someone shows up with an idea or a solution or wants to address a particular topic or issue facing women or standing in the way for women, it's much easier to do something if there's also money involved.
Yes. Yes. So are you, Lisa, are you managing the money yourself? Are you a money manager or you? No. So how does that work? You collect the money. You're the fundraiser. You're the money raiser. Okay.
Exactly. Yes. So in my role, I am a fundraiser. I am also a advisor to the board of directors, helping them craft vision and strategy. I also function as grant administrator, working with all the grant partners. I work as scholarship administrator, working with our school liaisons and our scholars. And then I also work very closely with each of the board committees. And one of the most important board committees that we have is our program committee, which, as you know, Kate is a part of and has been a strong leader this year in leading our effort of convening community and creating conversations so that we can better understand or deepen our understanding of a particular issue. And at the same time, you know, come together to wrestle with solutions or ideas, you know, helping the community advance equity for women. I mean, that's ultimately what we're trying to do.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a, how do I want to say this? It's a one woman show in the office, but so many women that make all the things happen. Is that what?
Yes. I mean, specific to the staffing, I'm the only full-time staff member. We do have a part-time accountant. She's a CPA. So she handles all the finances. But then we have a portfolio of consultants who are specific to their expertise. So somebody to work on our IT to make sure the network, you know, the typical
all
business,
the things,
you know,
yes,
so
yeah.
We have a network and internet and, you know, that kind of stuff. But then we also have somebody that helps manage the social media. Someone helps manage the database, you know, somebody that helps manage the website. So, you know, tapping into the skills that are needed to run an entity and at the same time providing, you know, career opportunities. We are sometimes a signature client for a startup where a woman might then be a vendor to us, you know, somebody who's providing service, but at the same time, we're helping her launch her business or develop her business further. So it's a win-win scenario with this. This model of a portfolio of consultants.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Tapping into all these women, incredible women in Milwaukee. So Sandy, this is where you come in. You are also one of these incredible consultants.
Well, I am on the board of the Women's Fund, and my current role also is chair of one of many programs that the Women's Fund sponsors, and that is the HER Scholarship Program. This is basically one of the founding members of HER Scholarship looked at her situation, which was she became a widow unexpectedly after the death of her first husband. And as she looked to go back to school, and she knew that education was going to be important for her to raise her family. This was back in the 1990s. Annette Stoddard Freeman and Sally Grudema jointly founded the HER Scholarship Program. But it was based on the fact that as she went back to school, she did not have an easy way to find scholarships for those non-traditional students. And that is the focus of HER Scholarship. Non-traditional students are those who are getting their degree later in life. So not your typical just out of high school, moving on to college. There's plenty of scholarships there. But women who are raising a family in their early to mid 30s or beyond, and really had found had a hard time finding scholarships that supported them. And so that is what our program does, basically helping those women who are balancing so many different things, as well as, you know, working on getting their degree and providing scholarships to help them achieve their dreams as well.
Yeah.
So it really is an exciting program. And every year we hear stories of women who are balancing family and work and education and everything else. And this is one way that we can help them focus on their education, which will help them lead to their economic self-sufficiency.
Yeah. And so is this scholarship a partial scholarship? Is it a full ride?
That's a good question. So our scholarship is based on an academic year, and we provide tuition for that year. And there are some criteria that we look at. We focus on three different universities in the Milwaukee area. That would be Alverno, Mount Mary, and UWM. And so we are now in the sweet spot right now, collecting applicants for this year's scholarship. And then based on the funding that we've been able to secure to date, we will determine how many women get those scholarships.
Okay. And it's quite a legacy. On your website, there's a huge list of women who've gotten this scholarship in the past. So that's exciting to know that you have touched that many women who are now out and about doing their thing, totally self-sufficient, hopefully.
I can add some data points to Sandy's explanation and introduction to the HER Scholarship Program. So as Sandy indicated, we launched the HER Scholarship Program in the mid-1990s. And since then, we have invested $465,000 in scholarships to women who are 35 years or older. We have had over 150 scholars participate in the program, and many of them have earned their degrees and furthered their economic empowerment leadership development, for sure. Some of them have gone on to get promotions, some have started businesses, some have, you know, orchestrated nonprofit organizations. And I think there's a couple of outcomes that are part of the HER Scholarship Program that are really beyond our wildest dreams. Mm-hmm. So you asked a little earlier, like, how is it a tuition scholarship? It is. We pay the scholarship right to the higher education institution, and the scholarships range in $3,000 to $5,000 per academic year. As you heard from Sandy, we do function on an academic year in the scholarship program, and it is absolutely dependent on support from the community. Mm. So any dollars that we collect in recognition of the HER Scholarship Program are then used for these scholarships. But I think Sandy has some great stories from HER scholars that will illuminate the dreams that these scholars have had and the contributions that they've made in their post-degree life.
Yeah. I'd be curious to hear, like, where these people are, what fields are they in?
Yes, it actually covers the gamut. I do have a couple of very favorite stories. And one of the things that we found within our committee, when we first meet these scholarship applicants, it is based on their application. So it's via paper. And you would not believe the stories that we hear. I talked about these are women who are balancing a lot. And almost to a person, they are heads of household. Some are single parents. They're raising their kids. They're going to school. They're working. And so that kind of balance, you can imagine, you know, it just is sometimes overwhelming. And many of them, because, you know, they may be looking for a scholarship to help them, this is the difference between whether they can complete their degree or not. Mm. One of my very favorite stories is with one of our scholars who we've gotten to know quite well, and she has since joined our committee as she has progressed in her career, which is, you know, phenomenal in and of itself, because now she's joining us to help make other women's dreams come true. But she tells the story. This is our friend Kathleen. She tells the story that she had one semester left and before she completed her degree. And she was a strong mother of three girls, holding it all together. And this was a couple of days before she had to tell her school whether or not she was going to come back for the next semester. And she was struggling because she didn't have enough funding. And as many women do, they try to keep a stoic face up for the kids, but she got home and she was overwhelmed. She sat in her car and was crying and just trying to figure out how she was going to make ends meet. Mm. Well, she got a phone call while she was sitting in her car, didn't answer it because it was a number that she didn't know. And a couple minutes later, that same number called her back and she answered. And at that time, it was our executive director of the Women's Fund prior to Lisa leading our organization, who was calling her to let her know that she had been named a HER scholar. And with that, the dollars would help her finish her last semester. Of course, you know, they had the connection because it was just at an optimal time. But you can imagine, you know, if you as a non-traditional student just don't have the money coming in, where is it going to come from?
Yeah.
And so stories like that really bolster us and, you know, our community who is helping to support these scholarships have an opportunity to meet the scholars each summer, usually in August before the fall semester starts. We have a reception where we can take these stories that we've heard on paper, meet the scholars, and then help them help support them in their journey as they're completing their degree as well.
Oh, that's so neat. I can imagine there were more tears in that car after that phone call.
They were happy tears.
Yes, happy tears, happy tears. You know, yeah. That's so interesting that she now is on the committee. And one thing we found in this podcast that we is not surprising, but that we weren't even thinking about in what we would uncover is how women, when they are given opportunities, then turn around and make sure that people behind them also have those opportunities. And in almost every episode that we've had, the person we've interviewed has talked about what they've then done to make sure that people or women in particular behind them can come up through the ranks. And I think that's so, I don't know if men do that. Do men do that? Maybe they do, but I feel like we have, as women, we do that. And that's so, it just, again, obvious in this woman who's now on your committee, making sure that these scholarships can happen for other women. That's so cool. So the scholarship fund, the HER, does HER stand for anything, or is it just like she, her. Okay.
Yep, she, her.
So the HER scholarship is one big area where funds go. Obviously over, if you had over 400,000, that's a big fund, part of the fund. Where else do the funds that you raise go? What other things are you supporting?
Yeah. So we do three important things. You heard about the HER scholarship program. The other thing that we do is provide grants to area nonprofit organizations that are really addressing issues that stand in the way for women. Mm. And so this year, for example, our focus has been on funding advocacy. And so people say, well, what does that mean? What's funding advocacy? And so we're funding advocacy in a variety of ways. It might be personal advocacy, where we're trying to support an organization that's supporting women to be advocates for themselves. Mm. It could be community advocacy, where people are trying to reach out to the community to teach them or deepen their understanding about something. It could be somebody that is some organization that's working on a particular policy issue that they're trying to raise awareness around or trying to get to the floor of the state capitol or legislation change. So it's a variety of projects. We have, I have to look at the data, but I think we have 10 partner grant partners this year. We have given out over $100,000 in grants this year alone.
Wow.
And I'll just give you a couple of examples of how we're supporting advocacy. One of our grant partners that has been grant partners many, many times through our grant history is the Lotus Legal Clinic.
Mm.
The Lotus Legal Clinic is focused on providing legal service and counsel to people who are facing situations that they can't fund with a traditional hiring an attorney and, you know, getting that work. So they provide legal services free of charge to their clients. Okay. And so we're supporting that organization as they advocate for others.
Okay.
And they do direct service to clients, but they also train attorneys on how to better serve the community.
Mm.
And that they might not be familiar with around issues that relate to immigration or reproductive health, you know, issues that are facing women who mm-hmm. might not have the opportunity to go to a law firm and access services.
Yeah,
so they have sort of a ripple into the community because they're training attorneys about these issues and how to work more closely with people who they might not be familiar with so that they can go back into their work, their professional life, and perhaps have a new perspective or new information or an experience that touched their own heart and changes their own dreams. Another grant partner that we have this year is the Wisconsin Women's Network. And this is an organization that has a policy institute that helps women prepare and better understanding what it takes to run for office and secure a position in an elected office. And we were quick to say, yes, we want to fund advocacy in this way. We want women to see a pathway to elected office because we know that elected office has a lot of power and a lot of opportunity to make change, to eliminate barriers and create more equity.
Yep. Yep. And we need more women.
Yes, we do.
Yes, we do.
yes. One of the, in honor of the 100th anniversary of the 19th Amendment, we funded a grant proposal that came to us from the Research Institute at Alverno. Alverno College has a Research for Women and Girls Center, and we funded a research project where Dr. Lindsay Harness did a statewide research project on talking and working with elected officials, trying to understand what were the barriers that they faced? How did they overcome them? How did they fund their campaign? What are the issues that they have to deal with as women in these elected office? And so it was in 2023, because of course, the global pandemic, we were able to actually hear and see the published report of that research.
Oh, interesting. So it's out now.
Yes, it is.
Can you give us any of the key...
yes, of course. So a couple of points of interest. And of course, Dr. Lindsay Harness has an amazing presentation and fantastic information to share. But I think a couple things that were really of interest is, one, that women had to be asked. Not uncommon, but women had to be asked multiple times from multiple people to run for office. This is the most common way that women come to the point of, hey, I'm going to put my name in the hat and run for office. And of course, there's a variety of reasons and explanations to why that might be. But I think that's important for us, to your point earlier, you know, how do we help nurture dreams for others? And what is our role in helping those dreams come to fruition? It might be that we think about the people in our own network that say, who could we tap to say, hey, maybe you should run for school board, or you should run for alderperson, or maybe the state legislator, to eventually get to the path of maybe the U.S. Congress at some point.
So
I think, you know, we should seriously think of that individually for ourselves.
Yeah.
If we're not interested in running ourselves, who do we know that might be interested?
Right.
Let's plant those seeds for other people, because research says that's what needs to happen. We have to ask others, women, to run for office.
And nurture that confidence.
Exactly. I think the other thing that is not exclusive, this other thing that's not exclusive to running for office or the elected official's role, is how do we have to support women on that journey to achieve their dream? That includes campaign money, but it also includes things like childcare and family care, meals. When I'm out campaigning, you know, across the community, who's taking care of my children, or, you know, my other responsibilities. And so I think as women, we can maybe think about, how do we support our friends and colleagues as they run for their dreams? That might be non-traditional. You know, maybe that doesn't have to happen for everybody that's running for office, but we heard it in the research that women need support as it relates to childcare and family care, both while they're running and then even after they're elected.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, the unspoken things that you don't think about.
Exactly. And then the third thing that we do is convene the community. You mentioned it when we first got started. You attended the Women's Fund Presents event. This is an event that's been going on for years. Our first community event happened in the early 1990s. And at that time, it was called Women in Public Policy. Some of your listeners might also have been attendees for all those years. And it was really focused in the line of advocacy and legislation to really better understand how does a woman function in public policy and what how can we influence the legislators who are already in those elected office. Mm. And then in the, I don't know, what do we call them, in the mid-20-teens?
Right.
We migrated to the current concept of Women's Fund Presents. And then each year, the Women's Fund Presents event has identified a particular issue or topic that we want to better understand or go further on or maybe highlight for the community and then seek somebody that could come to our community to help address that issue. Mm-hmm. So they've run the gamut of Title IX and how athletics and the bill that passed in 1970s helps and is relevant for women today. We've talked about intersectionality. We've talked about feminism and reclaiming it. We've talked about the power of philanthropy. So we've even had Rebecca Ryan talking about the future and how to think like a futurist. So this is a really important part of what the Women's Fund work is all about.
Yeah.
You know, this is where you might nurture a dream, where you might affirm a dream. It might be where somebody meets other people that can help fulfill their dream, because it does create such a good sense of community.
Yeah.
We're all together talking or addressing or exploring a particular topic.
Yeah. Yeah, it really did. And now I've been to quite a few of your events, or since then, the ones you've put on, the Ex Fabula book discussion about the She Speaks book back in March. And at that event and at the Women's Fund Presents, I was at a table with women I didn't know, but by the end of the event, I felt like I knew them, you know, and we were having really intimate discussions. And it, both of the events really created a safe space to have those discussions and to really look at, I'm even looking at it now, you gave us a discussion prompt list. And you know, it's not small talk. We jump right into like, where is the power in this situation? Where have you had power? Where, you know, what power did it bring you when you gave a speech once? You know, just really interesting questions. And I really appreciated that about, you know, there's enough networking things that you can go to where you just have to talk about who you are and what you do and how many kids you have, you know, but this was like, nope, we're going to get right to the good stuff so we can get on to what I really think you guys are about is the solutions, right? Like, how do we make sure that this city, this world is equitable for women and girls? So
yeah, exactly. And I think that's where we're different than a membership organization. And we're different than an organization that is specific to somebody's expertise. You know, like if you have a subject expertise and you're part of an association. So this is really neither of those, right? We're not a membership organization and we're not an association for some subject matter expertise. Instead, we are a community of people who value women. So we're not even like-minded. I know some people like to say, oh, you're like-minded. It's like, no, we are not like-minded. Let's hope we're not like-minded. We don't want to be a cult of any sort.
Right.
We really want to celebrate and acknowledge the achievements and contributions made by women in history, but also today and going forward. And I think that's where your point of saying, you know, it's not the fluffy stuff. It's not to suggest that our day jobs are not fluffy, you know, because they're meaningful and valuable and add to the economy, of course. But we do try to get past and say it's not about the positional power that you come to this event. It's your human power, like who you are and what you can do in your own network after this experience.
Yeah.
So you came, we had this shared experience, we had this shared awakening, we had this shared understanding. It might deepen our understanding about something. It might enhance our understanding about something or have a new perspective on something. And then what do we do with it individually? How do we carry this out to be the ripple in our own networks? Because then it's that collective ripple that will create the wave of change we're all longing for. You know, the one that we dream about.
Yes.
I think that's what makes us really unique and opens the doors for lots of conversations to happen.
Yeah. So do you want to talk a little bit about the different kinds of events? You talked about the women's prison, the big one in the fall, but then there are other smaller events, or maybe not smaller, but there are other events throughout the year that you hope new women will come to. You don't have to be a member, so anyone is welcome, right? Okay.
It's true. Yeah, I think, Sandy, you mentioned a really important one for the Women's Fund. That is our HER Scholarship Program reception. And that's a terrific opportunity to really meet the scholars, but then also be part of community. And I think one thing I want to say about the HER Scholarship Program that we've heard over and over and over, by all means, I don't want to minimize the value of the money, the scholarship dollars, because, you know, who doesn't like support when you're financially fragile and trying to achieve a dream and a goal? But I think we've heard it from numerous HER scholars through the years, is that in addition to the money and that support that comes financially, is the support that they get from the people. Mm. You know, so for a HER scholar, Kathleen, I think, probably would agree that it was the money, but it also was the understanding that these anonymous people were believing in her. They wanted her to achieve her own dream, and they were willing to go there with her. So I think when we come to the HER Scholarship reception, that's a way for us to demonstrate our support. Just being in the room together shows support to the scholars themselves. And they all have an opportunity, if they want to say something to the crowd, they're certainly welcome to say something. Some do, right, Sandy? Some women get up and say something, and others sort of take a pass and just say thank you, which is, of course, perfectly fine.
So nice to see the fruition of what you're doing once a year.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I will say, you came to the book discussion. We have typically had one book discussion a year. This year, we partnered specifically with Ex Fabula. They are experts in teaching people how to be storytellers. In this particular case, the book She Speaks was a collection of speeches and women using the power of the podium to make change. And so we thought it was a really good opportunity for us to partner with somebody we had been grant partners with through the years. And it turned out really well, as you well know. We had four storytellers pick a speech and then talk about how that speech resonated with herself. I thought the most interesting that night, and I don't know what you would say, but the most interesting was the storyteller who had a conversation with Sojourner.
Mm-hmm.
She started off by saying, she told the audience, "I'm going to have a conversation with Sojourner." And she said, "I hope you can distinguish the two voices." And then she read with very much authority. She read some part of the speech, and then she would respond and say, I'm paraphrasing here, she would say something like, "Sojourner, I understand that perspective, but we're not doing that work anymore." And then she would read something powerful about Sojourner, and then she would come back and she said, "I can see with your 1852 eyes, that would make sense. But in 2023, we're focused on," and then she would respond.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was such a creative way to show the commonality with what Sojourner was talking about in the mid-1850s. And how similar we are still talking about those issues that impact women and girls, but at the same time, demonstrating that there has been progress, that there has been change, that over the course of time, we can see that the arc of history does mean we're moving forward.
Yes. Yeah, I'm trying to remember. All of them were incredible.
They were. They did a fantastic job.
Yeah. Bringing in. And so that one, you partnered with Ex Fabula. I also was at the one last week where you partnered with Women in Design. What was the title of it? 20 and 20 or something?
Right. It's called Rapid Presentations, 20 slides in advancing 20 seconds. So 20 slides, 20 seconds. And the concept is that everyone makes a presentation, as you saw, nine presenters, all surrounded around one common theme called What's Next. This year's theme was What's Next. So we had nine women interpreting What's Next as a theme. Mm-hmm. And each of them shared a story. And behind them, 20 slides advanced automatically every 20 seconds. And wow, didn't you see a variety of interpretations of what's next?
Yes. Yeah. I think what struck me most about it are the commonality and the ones I appreciated most. And then what I see in all of the Women's Fund events is story, right? Because you write a thing like, please donate, women need help, or we need to keep girls, we need to make things equitable, please give money. Like, nobody's going to pull out their checkbook, right? What makes somebody pull out a checkbook is hearing those stories, hearing the, Sandy, you talk about the HER scholarships, like hearing what these women do with that and then go on to do for our community, or hearing struggles, or, you know, and I think story is just so important in life, but in also in your work of raising money to then make sure that we can fund these organizations who are doing things for women. And so I think last week I appreciated the ones that really involved not only what they were doing professionally, but how that impacted them personally or how that impacted our city. Yeah. Yeah. That was fun. That was a really, I'd never been to one of those. It was like speed dating or speed idea-ing, kind of.
Right. It's ideation in its biggest form, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But hopefully these experiences that you've had with the Women's Fund allows you to create a new attitude or, you know, shifts your thinking or behavior as it relates to an issue or topic.
Yeah.
And that's really what the Women's Fund is all about, that collectively the experiences that you have build your confidence, build your understanding, deepen your perspectives on things so that you can be that ripple, that you can go out into your own community, whether it's your small immediate family, or whether it's your neighborhood, the block that you live on, the community you live in, or, you know, maybe the broader world stage. I mean, I don't know. The dreams are yours.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So if there are listeners out there who think, oh, I wonder either A, if I could get involved, or B, what if I have something that I could use? I know you do grants and flash grants also, which maybe are those mini grants or smaller grants. Like,
yeah.
Is that something that one just submits something? How does one get a flash grant?
Oh, that's a good question. The Flash Grant program was developed in 2017, and it was really designed to respond in the moment. So I did talk about our grants, our formal grant cycle previously, and that is very competitive, and it is orchestrated with deadlines and dates and, you know, a formal procedure. There's a committee, just like Sandy referenced, the HER Scholarship Committee. We have a grant advisory committee. They go through all the paper applications and determine which partners that we want to proceed with and make a recommendation to the board for approval. In our Flash Grant program, we're responding, you know, in the moment. Mm. It could be that we want to highlight something that just happened or that is happening, or that we want to just cheer on an organization to say, yes, we like what you're doing, more please. Mm-hmm. It might be someone has their own reaction to something. And I will give you an example. Last summer, after the Dobbs decision, we had a couple of women come forth to say, you know, I feel like this is really important. And, you know, women need body autonomy. And so I want to do something. And so we did have a matching grant, and we were able to provide that matching grant opportunity to the community. And we had a lot of people step forward and match that grant. Mm-hmm. And so we were then able to use that funding to provide flash grants in the name of reproductive justice and services that women need. So that was exciting. We just made a flash grant. This one is going to be maybe surprising to some of, to you and to some of your listeners, but Planned Parenthood is beta testing and trying out the program for providing vasectomy services to men in our community. Mm. And they're only doing it to a small number of people at one location because they just want to understand, you know, what are the services that, that men need and how can we be supportive? And so the Women's Fund made a flash grant in support of that service that Planned Parenthood is launching. Mm. So we obviously cannot fund the entire program, but we can say, yay, three cheers to you. We believe, we support your thinking in providing this service to the community. And yeah. So we approve that. But I will say that the Flash Grant program has a much more casual approach. The gifts are significantly smaller. They're typically between $500 and maybe $2,000 on the top side.
Okay.
Somebody can just send me an email with a paragraph description of what they're asking for. We obviously cannot fund all of the requests that come in, nor can we fund them in significant dollars. And we use it really as a way for the board of directors and our Flash Grant committee to respond. Mm. So we don't actively solicit requests. We're much more, we're trying to use it in a much more responsive manner.
Okay. Okay. That makes sense. That makes sense. And quick, a quick turnaround as opposed to the lengthy process. That makes sense.
Yeah. I think the Flash Grant program also demonstrates and underscores something that's unique perhaps to Women's Funds and Foundations, again, based on research. The Women's Funding Network, which is the national international entity that kind of brings us all together, all the women's funds and foundations across the world are under this umbrella of the Women's Funding Network. They recently produced research that says that women's funds and foundations move money 9 months faster than other philanthropic organizations.
That doesn't surprise me. that's incredible.
So the Flash Grant, our Flash Grant program is certainly doing that. Mm. So someone can make a gift today and, you know, 10 days later, we could be writing a check in support of a Flash Grant in the community.
Yeah.
So it's, wow. It's very fast.
So if our listeners would like to get involved, obviously they can whip out a checkbook, but they can also come to these events. Anybody is welcome. Some of them have small fees if there's refreshments provided, but it seems like by and large, people are just welcome.
Yes.
They can find out about this and events. Do you have mailing lists, your website? Where do people hear about these things?
Yes, we do have a website, of course, womensfund, mke.org. And there are, I will just acknowledge that there are 16 women's funds in the state of Wisconsin and literally dozens and dozens and dozens of women's funds and foundations around the world. So people can specifically look up their community and find their own women's fund. Our Women's Fund of Greater Milwaukee focuses on the three or four counties right here around Milwaukee. There is a separate Women and Girls Fund in Waukesha County. And so we have a sort of a soft agreement with them. You know, they take care of services and issues in Waukesha County. They do their fundraising inside Waukesha County. And we respect that graciously and okay. Focus on the remaining other counties around the community. Yes, some of the events have a fee to attend. At the same time, we always try to keep an option open. You saw that in the community talk back that you registered for She Speaks. There was an opportunity to make a gift and pay for others to come for free. And mm-hmm. we had more than a dozen people that came as our guests, which is perfectly fine. But then I also had somebody that said, you know, I will help fund anybody that came for free. Mm-hmm. So it's really a sense of community supporting each other.
Yeah.
We certainly welcome gifts of any size. We have a range of gifts that come to us, $5 a month. It could be $5,000 a year. It could be $50,000. It could be an estate gift, gifts of all sizes. And I encourage people to seriously think about how they're making their philanthropic gifts. So we didn't talk about this, but I do want to bring up the fact that just 2%, which is a roundup from 1.9% of all charitable gifts are in direct support of women and girls.
Wow.
So this is national research data that comes from the Women's Philanthropy Institute at IUPUI in Indiana. Annually, they do a research project that really looks at all the granule data points to come up with this statistic. And last year's statistic, which comes out in June, says 1.9%. So we rounded up just to make it easy, just 2%.
Oh my gosh.
And so this means that religion, higher education, education in general, animals, environment, while they're all very important, they all receive a greater percentage of the pie through philanthropic dollars than women and girls.
Wow. That's, yeah. Okay. I can see why you are in this work. Oh, we need to get that number up. Come on, listeners.
Yeah. I think it's really important that everyone, all of us, the three of us and that are talking today and the listeners, really consider, you know, if you value women, if you value the women in your own life, if you value the women in society, their contributions and achievements, then are you aligning? You know, question your own giving and just ensure that you're aligning your philanthropy with your values, with the things you value, with the people you value, so that we can move the needle on women and girls. Mm-hmm. And I think it's super important to think about the role of philanthropy in our lives. Mm. We all have a responsibility to be philanthropic, whether it's $5 or $5 million, we all have that responsibility. And at the same time, we have to think about how philanthropy impacts us. So higher education, human services, environmental, you know, our parks, there's so many, our art, our performing arts, it's visual arts, so much in the community is dependent on philanthropy to make our lives rich and valued. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really important that we think about our own philanthropy and are we giving in our values and can we stretch further to support women and girls specifically?
Yes. Yes. I'm thinking of that quote, to whom much is given, much is expected, right? So that's us ladies.
Yeah, I think, and Sandy, you talked about it, you know, when we're supporting other women, their dreams come true and then they give back. You talked about it as well in the beginning.
Right. We have an opportunity to pay it forward in a number of different ways. Certainly supporting those areas that you have passion and interest in is one part of it. And really getting involved as well. And that's been one of the best things that's happened from my experience with the Women's Fund and strong women like Lisa, who help us really focus and make a difference, not only in Greater Milwaukee, but in Wisconsin and beyond. And you never know where those ripples will touch, but certainly they come back to the organization tenfold. And it's really been very fulfilling to be part of the Women's Fund.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask Sandy, how did you get involved? How long have you been involved? What's your story with the Women's Fund?
I was introduced to the Women's Fund back in the early 2000s by a then colleague of mine. I was in corporate environment, and she was a board member of the Women's Fund. So she invited me to a couple of events, and as her board service expired, I was asked to join the board as well. And it took me, you know, a few months to really feel comfortable. But as you've heard from Lisa, there are so many different programs that the Women's Fund focuses on. And what caught my attention then and still has my attention now is our ability to provide scholarships for education for women, because we know the impact of education for the woman herself and her self-sufficiency, her economic support, but also the impact to her future generations as well. Mm-hmm. So I've been a member of the Hearst Scholarship Committee, as well as a board member for a long time. And it's been a passion of mine. Education certainly is a passion, and I do serve on the board of trustees of Carroll University here in Wisconsin, as well as I personally have been involved in philanthropy for endowed scholarships through Carroll, as well as through the Women's Fund and her scholarship committee. And it gives me great pleasure and joy to help to pay that forward and bring in people like Kathleen and various other women who not only have been the benefactors of the Hearst Scholarship Program, but now are part of our committee working to pay it forward.
Mm, love that.
Which is so perfect in a demonstration of, Sandy, you're aligning your personal values and your philanthropy mm-hmm. in supporting women.
Absolutely.
Which is exactly what the Women's Fund is all about. So she, mm-hmm. so Sandy, you're like the perfect
the poster child, poster woman, not poster child, poster woman.
The poster image of the poster Women's image. Fund
yes.
is Sandy Cunningham.
Yes,
aligning her values and her philanthropy.
Yes, yes. And what about you, Lisa? How did you get into the Women's Fund?
Yes. Yeah. It's interesting. It's, you know, how life takes it twists and turns, and then you evolve and you become something and you land someplace and you end up doing something sort of serendipitously. And certainly that is the case for me. I have a degree in business from the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, and I had started off in an organization, a nonprofit organization that was promoting business, advocating for students and understanding their opportunities in our economy. Mm. And when that ended, I then landed in a role supporting Carmen Petrie in creating the Sojourner Family Peace Center at Sixth and Walnut.
Oh, yeah.
So I worked closely with Carmen to run the capital campaign to build that facility and bring that vision to fruition here in Milwaukee. Parallel to that, I worked with Chris Herjong, the founder and CEO of the Hmong American Peace Academy. She was interested in doing a better job to serve her students by creating a renovated library. And so we did the very first community campaign that raised money to support a renovation of the library. We expanded the book collection, we renovated the physical space, and that certainly also invited the community into the Hmong American Peace Academy to better understand what HAPA was doing for the Hmong community and the broader community of Greater Milwaukee. I mean, they went on to do an incredible expansion that's just fabulous and wonderful in every way. But then after both of those projects were concluding, it was, again, sort of someone else approaching me to say, hey, Lisa, have you thought about going to the Women's Fund? And sort of the rest is history. I thought, I'd not really thought of that. And initially, I have to say, I thought, oh, it would be fun to be on the other side of the coin, to be in a role where I'd have the opportunity to make grants and help determine how dollars should be invested in the community or could be invested in the community to address the issues that impact women. But in truth and full honesty, I have to say, there's a lot more fundraising involved at working at the Women's Fund than I initially expected. But that's good. It's all an opportunity to create more community and invite more people to use the power of their own philanthropy and not only become a philanthropist or acknowledge themselves as philanthropists, but maybe also weave in the opportunity to label yourself and call yourself and identify yourself as a feminist and be a part of a greater movement for women. So it's a real privilege to be in this role. It's been a lot of fun. I get to meet people like the two of you, both you and Sandy, you know, are new to my network since I've been with the Women's Fund. So it's been wonderful and fabulous.
Yeah. Oh, well, I'm certainly inspired, and I think our listeners will be too, to jump into more events. So by the time this comes out, you will have an event tomorrow, Thursday, May 4th.
Yes, that is correct. So apparently this had been done several years ago, but we had taken a pause on it. And during the pandemic, we celebrated our 35th anniversary. And so we came together and as a board and a staff to say, what do we want to do to celebrate? You know, this is a big milestone, 35 years of the Women's Fund, we should do something. And so we planned a celebration of impact, a chance for us to look back on our 35 years of involvement in the community and all the things that we were able to participate and support. And candidly, I will say it was so well received virtually that after the, you know, COVID scare and need for self-isolation concluded, we went to an in-person event that also was so well received that has now become part of our annual tradition. And it's an opportunity for us to come together and really celebrate all that the Women's Fund has done, not only in the immediate past 12 months, but, you know, over the course of time. And so Sandy will have a role in the event along with other board directors on Thursday, May 4th. The event is hosted by Foley & Lardner. So we'll be at the 40th floor of the U.S. Bank Building in their fabulous space and view of the city. But then the event is also sponsored by the individual board directors. So each of them has made a gift in specific support of this event to offset any related expenses. But maybe Sandy, you want to say something about what you have in store as your piece of the agenda that night.
Yes. Coming back to our previous discussion, the impact is around the stories and the storytellers themselves. And so specifically, we will have a HER scholar talk about her journey, which, like many of us, is never a straight line. Twists and turns and challenges and roadblocks, but perseverance really is the name of the game. And then beyond that, we'll be focusing on some of our grant partners and the impacts. We'll hear directly from them what the sponsorship from the Women's Fund has meant to them and how they can focus their programming even more strongly within the community. So our event will be celebrating the impact, and you'll hear directly from the storytellers themselves. It's always a wonderful opportunity to really understand the individual stories and then the collective impact that we as funders and philanthropists can help to make Milwaukee greater.
So for our listeners who want to pull out their checkbook, $5 a month, $5,000 a year, whatever you can offer, come hear the broad impact of the Women's Fund of Greater Milwaukee at this event. And at any of their events, really, because you do take a nice moment to talk about what you do and the importance of what you do, which I appreciate as well. I do want to be mindful of your time, but we usually do a little rapid fire at the end, if you two would be open to that. So you are, and these are just kind of fun Milwaukee questions, but you are taking a donor to dinner, whether it's for the Women's Fund generally or the HER scholarship. Where do you take them? Where do you like to go to dinner in Milwaukee?
I'll jump in. My father is Hawaiian and came to Wisconsin. Can't figure that one out. But there is a wonderful Hawaiian restaurant, deli, store, caterer in Wauwatosa called Onokine Grinds. And they have the most fantastic Hawaiian food that it's almost as good as being back in the islands. So Onokine Grinds for sure.
That is on my bucket list to try. So thank you for, I'm going to move that up the list. How about you, Lisa?
Oh, I think there's so many fabulous restaurants in Milwaukee, in Greater Milwaukee. I mean, just so many. Our food options have just multiplied in so many ways. Mm-hmm. I guess I would usually turn the table on whoever I'm going with to ask them what their favorite place would be and sort of roll around in, you know, going to all the places without any one favorite.
Is there a favorite woman-owned business in town? Could be restaurant, but it could be just a business that you like to promote or, you like to shop at, or?
Again, so many women.
It's so hard to pick a favorite.
So many women trying to achieve their dream in becoming economically self-sufficient and running their own business. I will say, just because we've talked about it, we did invite Bridget from Good Homes on Downer Avenue to both be a presenter at the Women in Design partnership we did on April 20th. We've also patronized her store to get our thank you gifts for the storytellers that were at our community book read in the Xfabula partnership that we did earlier. Mm-hmm. And we were just at Sugar Maple the other day, just off KK in Bayview neighborhood. And that was where we did that rapid presentation event. For that event, we also utilized Lulu's Catering. And so we carried food from across the street into Sugar Maple to, you know, celebrate the women's presentation. So we regularly try to use women-owned businesses, lifting women in their roles as business owners and contributing mm-hmm. members of the community. We hire photographers that for our events that are women. For the upcoming event that we talked about on May the 4th, we have Lisa McKay as the chef, you know, providing the food. We'll have a photographer who's a woman. So, you know, we're trying to invest our own dollars as consumers mm-hmm. to patronize businesses that are owned and operated by women.
You're living the mission. Yes.
Doing our best.
Is there a woman we have Cavalier Johnson is our mayor now. We have, but so many, he's bringing so many women into power, which is fantastic. But is there a woman you'd like to see lead Milwaukee one day?
Oh, that's a very good question. So here's where I should be prepared to tap everybody that I know to say, you should run for office. You should be mayor, right? I mean, that would be living our research project that we know about, right?
Yes. I'm going to have to give you time to think about this question. Yes, that would be okay. We can take a rain check on this one.
Yeah, I thought you were going to go in a different direction to say, who is a woman that you admire? I always want to say, you know, RBG, you know, Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg did such a fantastic job moving things forward for women, even well before she was a Supreme Court Justice. You know, she was advocating for women in the 1970s, and she led so many policy changes that allowed us, collectively us, the opportunity to be who we are in 2023, you know, carry a credit card with our own name, to participate in jury, you know, to have the opportunity to own a business and own a home. You know, those are all a result of RBG. So I thought you were going to ask, who do I admire the most? Yes. Or who did I ever want to have dinner with? And I would have said RBG.
RBG, yes. Alas, she can't run Milwaukee these days.
Yes, no.
Let me switch up the... Oh, no, sorry. Go ahead,
Jenny. I was going to say, I would add to that explanation of who I admire. Alverno's newest president... ninth president is Christy Brown, and I've had the honor and pleasure of getting to know her and working with her on a board, and it is just wonderful to see how she has progressed in her career, in her impact to girls via the Girl Scouts, and now she's got, you know, yet another role, and I'm sure living her dream also. Recently named as the ninth president of Alverno. So she's a woman to be following. She is leading the charge.
Keep our eyes on her. I guess right. That segues nicely into our last question, which we asked all our guests, is, are there people that you see, and I think she'll be one of them, in Milwaukee who are living their dreams, who we should talk to? Or even maybe somebody who's just at like scratching the surface, maybe one of your HER scholars, right? Who's just on the beginnings of their dream that we could follow along with.
Well, of course, Sandy and I would be happy to introduce you to some of our HER scholars directly. Some of them, I'm thinking about Bridget and Bridget's personal journey. She's a HER scholar. She happened to also be a young widow with a large family to take care of. She's since graduated from college. She launched her own business. She has a really inspiring story to tell that is her own life. I think it's always nice for us to talk about these women as people that we know and have supported, but I think it's also important to provide them an opportunity to tell their own story and to be the storyteller of their own lives, for sure. She would be one. I will think about it. I think if you're going to create a theme for season four, I would be happy to help you brainstorm people from our network.
Yes, we will come back to you. We'll tap you for that. We usually take a summer hiatus just because between the two of us, Shelly and I have seven kids. And so summers are just kind of off limits for everything else. But yeah, our goal is to bring this back for season four. And we kind of keep saying we'll stop when we run out of incredible women to talk about. And so I don't know when we're going to stop. Yeah, we're having so much fun doing it. And so grateful that you two could join us or join me today for this conversation and for letting our audience know about what you do and how we can get that 2% up, because that's not okay. And I know I personally am going to think about that more. And where does my own personal money go? And I want to make sure that I'm doing my part in lifting that up. And hopefully this has inspired our listeners not only to do that, but to get involved and to come and check out some of your events. So
yeah, sounds good. Wonderful to be with you. Thanks so much for having us.
Yes, thank you so much. Well, there you have it, folks. Last interview of season three. Oh, and what a good one to end the season. To hear about an organization whose mission really aligns with what we're trying to do on this podcast, which is to lift women up, to make sure they have a voice, to make sure that they are supported, that their needs are met, that their funding needs are met, because that has been an issue. If we look back on all of our guests, and if Shelly was here with me, we'd go back and forth and try to remember all of them. But I just know that has been a common thread, is also funding. In getting the funding for dreams, because not all dreams are free. So I hope you've enjoyed this, listeners. I hope that this has inspired you to get involved, to think about your own philanthropy and whether that aligns with your values. And if you're listening to this podcast, if you made it all the way through, you obviously value women and girls and their contributions, our contributions to our society, to our community, to our families, to our neighborhoods, to our world. So I'd encourage you to put your money where your values are, as we talked about in this podcast. So thank you to Lisa Antonito and Sandy Cunningham from the Women's Fund of Greater Milwaukee for joining me for this conversation, this important conversation. You can find out more about the Women's Fund, about all of their events, all of their grantees, all of their HER scholars, all on their website, womensfundmke.org. You can follow them on the socials, Women's Fund MKE on Instagram and Facebook, and attend an event. They're so welcoming, such lovely women at these events, and such important conversation. So make sure you get out to one of their events this summer if you can make that work in your schedule. And we will be back next week. It's actually Shelly and I talking. Find out what Shelly is up to, why she wasn't here today. I don't want to spill the beans, but it's pretty exciting. Dare I say, it's pretty dreamy. You aren't going to want to miss it. So we will see you next week for another last episode of Cream City Dreams. Until then, Milwaukee.
Keep on dreaming.
Keep on dreaming. You know I had to splice Shelly in here somewhere.
Woohoo!
Okay, listeners, we have but one request this week.
Who do you know that wants to hear this podcast? Would you send them a text with a link?
Someone out there needs this episode. Someone needs to be inspired.
Or maybe you really want to go to one of these events with one of your friends, because connection's so important. Getting out and doing things. We can do that again.
Yes.
Text an episode to somebody that you want to reconnect with and invite them out.
Make it happen. Share the pod.